Survivor Specialist John and McKenna are here?
Yeah, we are officially on the channel talking to you about Survivor, and we are so excited. John, what were your thoughts on this episode?
You know what? It's a premiere for a brand new season of Survivor. It's always exciting. I was super happy just to have Survivor back on my screen again. Survivor 44 came out kind of swinging. Like, this cast, we talked on the Patreon about how we thought like this cast might be. We were right about some, we were wrong about others. But in the end, that with some brand new advantages, this is shaping up to be a very fun season of Survivor.
Yes, I am so excited to watch this play out and let you guys know the gist of what's going down with this podcast. So it is not necessarily a recap because that is Phil and Alexa right after the episode, but we are going to be talking about this episode and referencing past episodes within it, like certain memories we have from past episodes of Survivor, talking about the history of Survivor within this week's episode. And then on our Patreon, we are going to be deep diving an episode that we specifically reference in this recap.
Yeah, so every Thursday from now on, after you hear Phil and Alexa on Wednesday recapping the episode, McKenna and I are going to come in with our historical take on what we just watched.
Yeah, exactly. So let's start off with the tribe names, something I am very passionate about, and John glanced right over his head. There are two tribe names that are super similar to ones that we have had in the past, which I'm repping right here. Ratu is basically Rotu, and then Soka is Soko from HHH. So there hasn't been a lot of diversity in names at some points. Like, we have Coco from last season. So, like, it's kind of like they're twisting it a little bit.
Yeah, and part of that comes from the fact that, despite the fact that, you know, Rotu is Marcasian and not Fijian, the point of the matter is they keep using these names over and over again because they're still in Fiji.
Similar. Yeah, exactly. But let's get into the bread and butter, which is the actual season and, you know, medical attention during challenges. So we have had a lot of that in Survivor's past. So let's talk about a big one, Russell Swan just collapsing at the maze because heat exhaustion, which we have seen throughout this episode as well.
Yeah. And when we look at the premiere for 44 and we have Bruce, you know, getting a little overzealous with his dive and hitting his head, serious injury. Like, head injuries are nothing to scoff at. Even if this didn't look like it looks bad because there's like blood gushing out of his forehead and everything. Mm-hmm. The problem is never like the blood gushing. It's always the potential of what can happen with a head injury. That's why concussions are taken so seriously in sports. Mm-hmm. Because brain swelling, Phil mentioned it yesterday with Liam Neeson's wife. It can be a moment and then all of a sudden everything turns for the much worse.
Yeah.
So we have Russell Swan collapsing in a challenge. We have, if we're looking at other premier medical issues that happen in a challenge, we're looking at Courtney Moon in the One World.
At least props for this challenge not being like just visually dangerous. Like, you just had to go under the mud pit. That was a giant leap into a net, and he's just like, make sure you fall on your back, and like your inherent like body is just like, oh my god, I have to brace myself. And then she needed a brace.
Yeah, when you look at someone like Courtney Moon who's jumping in this big cargo net, and if the challenge has this preface of, hey, you have to fall this exact way. If you don't, you're going to get hurt. Mm-hmm. Chances are you don't fall that way, you're going to get hurt. And that's where we get one of the, it might be one of the most iconic medical evacuations ever on the show because it happens so early. It happens so fast. Until now, it was one of two premier medevacs
Because then we have
Yeah, and those are the only premier medevacs we have until today. And we had Jackson last season, but like Phil specified yesterday, it's a little different of a situation because it's based on the medication that Jackson was taking. Mm-hmm. But it is still a premier medevac. So yeah. We're up to four in total now over 44 seasons.
But I think the medical attention during the challenge that closely resembles this one is Kelly Remington in Worlds Apart, where they are blindfolded, they drop the, pulley scaffolding thing, and it lands right on her head, deep cut, and blood everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, head injuries produce a lot of blood. Turns out there's a lot of blood that goes to your head. Mm. So they tend to look really, really exaggerated and really bad. And like I was saying, the danger of a head injury is the stuff that we can't see and not the stuff that we are seeing most of the time.
Yeah, exactly. So that all gets cleared up. He gets medical. He says he's fine. They continue with the challenge. And Jeff gives him this moment to say, "Survivors, ready, go." And my instant thought was when Cerise basically snuffed her own torch and said, you know, "All right, the tribe has spoken." And that was like a moment of Jeff giving his lines to the contestant because of this like monumental moment or something like that.
Yeah, it's an interesting situation where we get a Jeffism, one of these classic Jeff Probst lines that it almost feels sacred for Jeff to be the one saying it. Mm-hmm. And in these instances where he's acknowledging that, you know, there's something beyond the game happening right now, that he provides that opportunity for these people.
Yeah, exactly. And like to be Bruce, like I know he got medevaced, but just to have that moment before getting medevaced, like I got to call survivors ready. Did you see that? Like must have been pretty epic. And we'll move on to our next correlation here to past Survivor. And it's outside the immunity challenge. We go back to the camp of the sweat challenge with this coconuts in the net. It kind of brought back the memories of those challenges where they would have the net of coconuts. Either they would have to fill it and then it would drop, or you have the contestants that are holding up this heavy net of coconuts that the other team are firing coconuts into. And this is no easy task. Like coconuts are heavy.
Yeah, there's a reason why these challenges have mainly involving coconuts and nets have been suspending coconuts over the ground and holding it up as long as possible. And these massive physical feats that we keep seeing with this, it's because coconuts, they have quite a bit of a mass to them. And as you add more and more, I think it's really a quantity thing here.
Yeah.
But we've seen people struggle. We had the Karamoan challenge where Brandon Hance is
like holding up that net.
Yeah. But this is not an easy feat. And while this combination of coconuts and nets isn't something new in Survivor, this was definitely something we hadn't quite seen, because the net almost looks long enough that you don't have to drag it that far until that camera angle shifted and you actually saw the distance between these two piles of coconuts.
Yeah, I would definitely not want to do any of this, have any part in that. I would test my luck on the Savvy Challenge for sure. And then now we get to the Bruce medevac. So he's feeling shitty and he's kind of just almost collapsing. And then medical comes in and is here. And it's kind of similar to some other night medical evacuations with a Bruce.
Yeah, I mean, while Bruce from Panama is medevac for a completely different reason than this and isn't concussed but is congested is probably the best way to put that. This is the second person named Bruce to be medevac from Survivor, and you know,
so if
I had a nickel for every time
play Survivor.
Yeah, like if I had a nickel for every time this happened, I'd have two nickels, but it's still weird it happened twice.
Yeah, exactly.
As we alluded to earlier, this is the fourth premier medevac, with Courtney Moon from One World, Pat Cusack from David vs. Goliath, Jackson from last season, and now with Bruce this season. This is actually only the 15th medevac in Survivor history.
That's wild.
It feels like they all come in bunches, and we get them all. And it feels like we should have much more than 15. But yeah, this is only the 15th medevac. And two of those medevacs are people named Bruce.
Well, what are the odds? Okay, so now we get more medical attention this episode, because this is the episode of med attention. And we go to Matt next, and he falls off of this cliff. But before he falls off of this, it kind of gave us the visual of John Mish on Exile Island.
That solitary rock structure. And yes, John Mish was in Samuel Dossier and not in Fiji. It still has that feeling of it, almost that feeling of like man versus nature, and like that desire to overcome it is as how Matthew's approaching this. Don't climb rocks on Survivor, bad idea.
And with no shoes, that was just like a big issue for me. And then he gets his arm put in the sling. And if you listen to our Patreon podcast, we compared Matt to a Winners at War Tyson Apostle, because he wants to be this dad, family man, funny, go lucky kind of guy, which is essentially what Tyson was. And then he gets put in a sling. So maybe he's blood versus water Tyson and is all into his husband.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Because especially when we take this comparison of Matthew to Tyson, we were kind of looking more at the personality tropes. And Tyson in Blood versus Water kind of exaggerated that injury to lower his threat level.
I mean, whereas hey.
Matt could, right? But whereas Matthew in this episode, even when the tribe was discussing whether to take the Sweat or Savvy challenge, he mentioned wanting to participate in the Sweat challenge to show his worth to the tribe, because he is the smallest guy on the tribe. So he kind of has that opposite issue that Tyson had, where Tyson exaggerated this injury to lower his threat level because he felt people thought he was too physical. Mm-hmm. Whereas Matthew, it's almost more of a detriment to Matthew. And I wonder if he can frame it more so that it does become his advantage, like it was Tyson's.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, let's see if he can use this injury a little bit further, kind of like Tyson did, to forward his game. Be like, oh, I'm not gonna win individual immunity. My arm, it hurts. And then, like, socially, I think he's pretty good socially. Move forward through the game.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, depending on how much Matthew wants to put emphasis on it, because like he does, based on what he said with that Sweat challenge, it does feel like he'll want to pull attention away from it. But at the same time, he's still sitting out of this immunity challenge coming. Mm-hmm.
Yes, exactly. And then just a tiny moment that appears that like spoke to John and I's little heart is they say bamboozled.
They so, do.
Obviously, it gets us back to good old Richard Hatch.
Yeah, it's weird how these certain words have these like triggers for you when it comes to Survivor. Things like, you know, ruffle feathers and things like that. They just harken back on these iconic moments. And when Jamie is off with, I believe she was with Kane at the time, and they were looking for this, key for the birdcage. And Jamie just says she doesn't want to be bamboozled. It just harkens back to that moment in All Stars where Hatch just exclaims, I've been bamboozled. Like, of all the words to choose there, bamboozled just sticks out so well. And you have to think the editors know that the hardcore Survivor fans are going to latch on to that exact word.
And here we are talking about bamboozled. So speaking about this birdcage and the Orange Tribe, we have Brandon and Maddie. They kind of come upon the key together, even though Brandon found it himself, but then he wanted to hide it. But then he told Maddie, and they wanted to hide it. So it was a big, like, issue there that
instantly stuck out to a moment for John.
Yeah, because we've had tons of people looking for immunity idols, finding immunity idols, hiding immunity idols while people are watching them. I mean, we have the Kageyan idol in the mud wall where Spencer's able to get it and pop it away quite easily without people noticing. But we also have this moment in Winners at War where Tony and Ben are just walking down the path and Ben finds the idol and tries to discreetly hide it. And Tony just calls him out on it immediately. And that's what this harkens more to, because at this point, we're not 100% sure how Maddie and Brandon are interacting with each other. We're not sure if they're going to end up working together in the future, if they trust each other at all. And to see this thought process of Brandon of, oh, I should hide this. I should just do this all for myself. Oh, but did Maddie see it? So is it better for me to come clean? It just feels like that moment, because in Winners at War, Ben has that moment where he tries to snow Tony, and Tony just pushes a little harder to be like, no, I definitely saw you get this.
Mm-hmm.
Which Maddie doesn't do, because she isn't 100% sure based on her confessional. But if you're in the instance where you're walking down a trail with someone and they happen to do something that seems a little too suspicious, maybe it's better just to push them a little bit.
Yeah, when Brandon then told Maddie and they were talking, should we hide it? What should we do? It almost to me reminded of the So Kim Joaquin, like, do we take the idol clue or the bag of rice? But we chose the medium option kind of thing. Yeah. Where it's like, do we tell them? Do we not? What do we tell them about this advantage section or idol, whatever?
Yeah, it's one of those dilemmas in Survivor, right? I mean, the best Survivor players will tell you never tell anyone about an advantage you have. And we kind of see why in this episode. There are so many parts of this episode that harken back on that old adage of don't tell people about your advantages. But we're also living in this new era where advantages just seem to be out in the open all the time. And everyone is telling everyone about their advantages, which it's really weird with these contestants on 44, when they would have seen 41 first, so they know about the knowledge is power.
Mm-hmm.
And they would have seen most of 42 before going out, so they probably knew about the knowledge is power there, so they probably should suspect that that's a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yet they're still out here talking about their advantages out in the open.
Yeah. Well, speaking of a place you can get advantages, Shipwheel Island, or is it even Shipwheel Island anymore? I don't know, but we're still going to be calling it that. It kind of, the closest we could relate it to is Ghost Island, because it is very separate, this iteration, from the original Shipwheel, where like it was more of a journey to like talk with other people, strategize, you know, get to know other people from other tribes, maybe create that Brandon Exile Island, you know, alliance thing that they have going on there. Like, it's less of that and now more of a game of chance, which was Ghost Island. You could play a game, you could not play a game.
Yeah, the real interesting thing about the Ghost Island comparison is that with Ghost Island, you had to smash an urn,
mm-hmm.
but production essentially decided when they were putting advantages into the game with that one. Because yeah. Summerin said you don't get a play, Summerin said you did get a play.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with this one, production has made it so people lose votes. Production seems to love people losing votes nowadays. And mm-hmm. to be fair, it does make very interesting dynamics in these six-person tribes, because it makes it a lot harder to rally numbers. Even watching last night and seeing the tribe trying to navigate how to vote with six people, it's harder to get a majority in a six-person tribe, and it's much easier to split the vote. So having these people lose their vote so freely is that interesting production choice, where that's kind of where it's really comparing to the Ghost Island of it, I feel, is production's like, hey, people losing votes gives us entertainment.
Yeah.
And at the same time, it's like, we're forcing this on you now. We are forcing you to make a decision. And at the very minimum, you are either losing your vote or gaining an advantage.
Yeah, exactly. I find more of the drama in this 3v3 that they already have. Like that, I feel like it's kind of worse than that's why Ghost Island has not appeared again. That they're doing it this way where you have to lose your vote because then you don't see where anybody stands. So we don't see where someone stood because they can't vote. They can talk to anybody all they want and say, oh, if I had a vote, I would have voted with you, blah, 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 blah. But we won't know until they're able to vote again. And I feel like we get more drama if they choose to lose their vote, if they would choose to take a chance in the bag, or if it was, you know, just a 6v6 and they weren't forced to lose the vote.
Yeah, it's really where it differs from the last three iterations we've seen of this. Of course, we had like the Prisoner's Dilemma in 41 and 42. And then last season we had
the cards
and the wager and like so this time
most last season's with like, hey, I'm on the bottom, this is the talks in my tribe, I could really use this, if you do me a solid, I'll do you a solid back. There's like more of a communication and a secret alliance that could be formed with that, and I think it creates more drama relationships. You know, they knew there were two other people on other tribes that knew about an advantage that you might have. So like, I feel like it provides a lot more entertainment if they're going to keep doing this Shipwheel Island. I think it needs to be the cards where they can talk about it.
The other thing that's really relevant about last season in comparison to this is last season we saw that the number of people who risked their vote changed what the advantage was. And what it seems like this season is that each path had a different advantage. Now, we don't know what the path down Matt's trail or what the advantage down Matt's trail was because he just lost both of his votes. But we do know that the other two paths had two separate advantages. And when you're building the game that way, what is the intention? And that's the big question here, is what is the intention of production to have these different advantages? Because then it's this game of chance, kind of just like what path you happen to walk down to determine not if you're getting advantage, but which advantage you have a possibility of getting.
It's also always been one advantage is up for grabs. Exile Island, one idol, Ghost Island, this specific game led to this specific advantage. The ship wheels, you all risked your vote for an opportunity to get this one advantage. Like, it's always been one advantage. So I feel like I'm worried about how often they do this and the stakes, because I know you're going to correct me on the math here, but like it could come down to a 50-50 shot of getting an advantage if you lose your first vote, and like you have a higher chance of getting this advantage. If they want these advantages in play, just make an easier way to get, I don't know. It's just a lot of, there's going to be a lot thrown in the game and not a lot of ways to thwart it, because we saw 2 out of 3 people get advantages.
Yeah, and it's really interesting that we got the different result for each of the three people who went down this path, right? Where we had the result of someone lost both their votes, someone lost a vote and gained an advantage, and someone got the advantage on the first go. And it's this balancing act here that makes it really hard to determine what the intention of these paths are. And you were talking about the frequency of this visit, because we've seen it now 3 previous seasons, and none of them have had the same number as far as we can tell. Based on the edit, like 41 had more frequent visits, same with 42. 43, it seemed to only have a couple of them. So is this something that happens once in a while? Is this something that's going to happen all the time? Is it something that's going to happen determined based on like how many people are on each tribe at a specific point? There are so many questions I have about this that we can't really get answers for without someone directly telling us what the thought process is. So I don't know, maybe Jeff Probst will enlighten us a little bit on that.
Yes.
But one of these advantages seems pretty familiar.
We've seen before. Yes. It wasn't called the bank of vote. It was called just an extra vote, but with a stipulation. Lauren Rimmer had an extra vote where she could not vote at a tribal council. And that was then her banking her vote. But now it's just now it's just a new name.
A logical name, bank of vote. It makes sense. That's exactly what you're doing. I really like this idea for an extra vote. I know there was a lot of talk on Twitter after this vote was revealed about whether or not this is a powerful enough advantage based on the sacrifice you have to make of losing your vote. But I think that's what makes this advantage so interesting, is you have to weigh those choices. We were just talking about how everyone has to potentially lose a vote with the way this Shipwheel Island works. But with this advantage, you are given the choice as to whether you lose a vote or...
And it's at any tribal.
Yeah.
So it doesn't have to be at your six-person tribal. It can be at the merge, and when your vote might not matter. So it could go indiscreetly.
Yeah, and that's the most interesting thing about it, is there are certain points where I think it's acceptable to lose your vote in order to gain an extra vote. But you have to be in a really good position. I think Lauren took a huge gamble here, but she had the advantage of having told her tribe she already lost her vote.
That's crazy. Both Laurens had this advantage.
Yep, that is another correlation. But McKenna, right, remind us what happened in... McKenna, remind us exactly what happened in HHH with this advantage.
Basically, you just went up to the voting booth and was just like, I'm not going to vote. Okay, bye. And then I think she put the parchment in her bra or something like that. And it was basically the bank of vote is just, hey, don't vote at a tribal council, but it wasn't in play in the pre-merge. It was in play in the post-merge. So that automatically gives you a little bit more freedom to choose when to play this, because say there you're on the bottom of your pre-merge tribe and this vote could sway everything, but you have to put it in play the tribal council before. Mm-hmm. So it's like, how and when do you use this in the pre-merge?
Yeah, this advantage requires a lot of forethought. Did Lauren leverage it again?
Rimmer?
Yeah.
I don't think she told anybody about it and then just did it and Ben negated it.
Right. Because that's what happened. That's the story of that season.
Yeah. I just think I like the mechanic of this advantage, but I like it in the post-merge a little bit more. It allows you to utilize it a little bit more than like Lauren could be voted out tomorrow and then we never see this advantage through, which honestly could be a good thing depending on how often they go to this island and how many advantages are thrown around there. But
yeah, it's interesting putting an advantage. I feel like a lot of people feel an extra vote is a pretty weak advantage, but in a season where you're starting on a 6% tribe and we're living in this new era of Survivor where we haven't seen a swap in the last three seasons. Mm-hmm. So we can assume we're not getting a swap again this season.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, this vote holds a lot of power.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially for Lauren, who kind of does not seem on top.
It almost holds the same amount of power as the seal vote in Edgevik, or in, what is that? That season we don't talk about, Island of the Idols.
Gotcha.
Right, so, where there was that split and the steal a vote could just be leveraged so heavily in order to swing things that way. And that was with an 8-person tribe, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
So going down to 6 and now 5, that's a lot of power Lauren has there.
Exactly. And she might swing and a miss, but who knows if she, like, maybe tell someone she has an advantage because she did keep it a secret. But Matt knows, and I think everybody else knows, that she is fibbing about her visit. We'll talk about maybe in the next episode. Yeah. But get to this immunity challenge. All right. And we have a heat exhaustion little medical call here. So obviously, plus the other two medical calls, we could not talk about this episode of Survivor. And it is the Ko-Rong episode four, where everybody dies.
Yeah. I mean, this is one of those things where Survivor has such a hard job to manage heat, because it's one of those things that they can't really control. You know, you can't control how hot it's going to be while you're filming these things, and you can keep everyone hydrated as much as possible, but, like, there's some onus on the contestants, on the castaways themselves, to keep themselves hydrated and everything. But you go into this immunity challenge, and Brandon is suffering from heat exhaustion. Like, he's just completely fading. He's a big guy, so he's probably running hotter than these other people are, so he's going to hit him harder. And he spent 4 hours pulling coconuts across a beach.
Yeah, exactly. I don't fault the man for going down, but also we've had three medical calls in this damn premiere. Like, it's wild. And so, plugging our Patreon content now, we will be deep diving this Ko-Rong episode, and it will be going up tomorrow, I believe. And John and I are going to talk all about this three-person medical attention episode with a medevac. So tune in tomorrow there. But let's talk a little bit more about the actual challenge itself. And we got a giant slide puzzle, which we have seen before. Jeff is correct. We don't often see a giant puzzle like this, but we have seen sort of iterations of this giant slide puzzle.
That's right. We've seen two predominant giant slide puzzles. The first being in David vs. Goliath. And they aren't the same. They're not like a Survivor logo slide puzzle. They actually, both of these slide puzzles are quite different.
Yes, all three are completely different, but it's a slide puzzle.
The David vs. Goliath was just ordering numbers. And the other one that's probably a little more memorable was from the premiere of Edge of Extinction, where it's the asymmetrical slide puzzle where you have to get the big block out and slide it out from the puzzle. Puzzle pieces.
Yes, but unlike all of the other ones, this one has a formula. Where I feel like all the other ones don't really have a formula, because it all depends on how they're randomized in their grids. But this one has a formula, and it's a lot of moving around these pieces. So I was not shocked when Brandon, the biggest dude, was like, I'm out.
Yeah, and he's suffering from heat exhaustion. He's already pushing himself to his limits. Yes, he is a professional athlete. He is someone who can do this, can push it, knows what his limits are, can push them to it. But honestly, him knowing, being a professional athlete and knowing those limits, is probably why he can tap out at this point and be like, no, this is not going well. I need this attention. The weird thing here is this is the second time this episode where Jeff pauses the challenge.
I think so. In relation to the Ko-Rong challenge, where he does not pause it, the Brains tribe had already won immunity when Debbie collapsed. The other tribes were doing, quote unquote, fine. And then that's when medical needs to step in. Here, I think it would be unfair to the Orange tribe to have everyone still be competing because they haven't won.
Mm-hmm. Right. But at the same time, even if we go, if we just look back at last season, when Carla injures her hand in an individual immunity, nothing's paused so that medical can look at it.
She didn't ask for it, though.
That's true. Like, is that the difference?
I think so. I think if you ask for medical attention, she was just like, I'm going. Because even still, we didn't see the pause in the challenge until Bruce was like, okay, yeah, I'm collapsing and need help. Jeff was like, let me know if you need medical. So Carla never was like, I need medical. She was pushing forward. Bruce didn't want medical until it was absolutely needed.
Yeah, that's a good point. Maybe that's the difference there. But these tribes are competing so hard here that
Brandon
not competing here makes it really hard. And it just seemed like after the pause, there was a big infusion of energy for everyone, which really put this tribe back.
Yeah. Everyone got their boost in the break, but they didn't have Brandon back. He still sat out. So they were man down, and granted, yes, they did have the break, but everyone on the other tribe had the break as well. So it was still kind of theirs to lose.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a tough break. It happens. We see this type of thing happen a lot. In fact, it almost does remind me of that Cambodia or the Koh Rong challenge, which I suppose is in Cambodia. But even with like how the Bronze are tackling that, where Alicia's kind of just like kicking sand around and not really participating, and it puts them back a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. So we are now going to go to tribal because, you know, the orange tribe does lose, and this tribal is wild. We kind of relate it in a sense to the Cambodia famous tribal, where every advantage under the sun gets played, and then you have to decide, all right, who's going home?
Yeah.
And it's just like, all right, so now we have like three, possibly two people like having the ability to go home, and it's just everybody gets shrunk from the amount of like shots in the dark and idols and, you know, no votes. It's just everything kind of gets thrown into one tribal and at the premiere and the first tribal council.
Yeah. And during that Cambodia tribal council, like that's the infamous tribal council where it was so complicated. Jeff Probst brings out a whiteboard to show us exactly what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like crossing things out to show who's immune and everything. This was luckily a little less complicated than that because there were still people who could receive votes.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It almost does feel like a mini advantage game, right? Where we have this cascaded advantages and everyone has to play them at that time, right? Now, that being said, the difference here is these aren't expiring advantages. These are advantages that can last for the entire game, for the most part. Shot in the Dark can be used until Final 7. The Immunity Idol is good until Final 5. So it's interesting to see this happen. I don't know what I really want to hear from Jamie in Exit Press when we get to that point. What promoted her to play this Shot in the Dark? Exactly. The first successful Shot in the Dark, I might add. It didn't negate any votes.
But
didn't negate any votes, but it did stay safe. And then why did Matthew then also do that? Did Matthew do this because he knew the numbers were on Brandon and he didn't want to personally vote out Brandon? So he just used this as a way to abstain from voting?
Maybe.
Is this...
He shouldn't have felt unsafe in this moment.
But maybe he did. Maybe he thought his injury was something to be worried about. Right? And it does seem like there wasn't... I mean, no votes landed on Lauren, which was what we are led to believe was going to happen based on this like bench talk at the immunity challenge between Matthew and Claire. But that doesn't come to fruition. And we see someone else completely go home who we didn't even know was on the radar in the first place.
Yeah, that was that feeling alone reminded us of Advantage Geddon as well, where Suri goes home oh my gosh, how the heck does Suri go home? We know Brandon and Maddie had their like issues a little bit, or like Brandon didn't trust Maddie, and we can make the sense of it, but it's that feeling of like, oh, the real other just went home. Like nobody was talking about it. Maddie wasn't really a name that was being talked about.
No. And you can see the like logically how it would get there based on you know, paranoia. Brandon probably found out that Maddie was the one pitching his name out and everything like that. But McKenna, this is the first successful idol play since the final six of Winners at War. This is the first idol to negate a majority of votes in four seasons. In the new era itself, this is the first one to negate a majority of votes.
That's freaking wild.
And it negated two votes.
That's wild. Also, I believe it, I want to say also negated two votes, but we were talking, there was another idol play in a premiere episode, Redemption Island, Christina Kell, who she played an idol because she thought she was on the bottom. She did negate a couple votes, but it was not the majority of votes. And that was another idol play in the premiere. Like, people playing advantages in the premiere is just wild. I understand Brandon's, you know, thought process because, holy crap, all these people are playing advantages. Well, might as well stay safe.
I think it even goes beyond that because I actually think there's a little more of correlation between Christina Kell and Brandon here because Brandon's idol was completely public. Everyone knew he had it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if I recall correctly, it's been a little while since I've watched Redemption Island, but everyone knew Christina had an idol too.
I'm pretty sure.
So at that point, like I Matthew said it in this episode, the power of Brandon's idol is lost a lot in people knowing about it. And again, it goes back to everyone, you know, don't tell people about your advantages because people will be able to either use them against you or negate all the power from them. And that's what we have here. So Brandon playing this idol, it feels more like him saying, everyone knows I have this anyways. It is less dangerous for me to have it than for me or for me to use it. Than for me to hold on to it and hope I use it at the right time later down the line. Because as long as I have this, everyone's going to want to blindside me.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And, well, now he doesn't. And he was the blindside was attempted. And he succeeded in getting out his target. But that's pretty much all we've got for this episode in Past Survivor. John?
Yeah, I mean, this premiere, it provided us a lot. Thankfully, with us coming in with this new series, wasn't sure what we were going to get out of this first episode, but it did give us a lot of things to harken back to. We are living on 22 years of Survivor now. I guess it's 23, technically, with that gap year. But we're in our 23rd year of Survivor now. And there's so much history of Survivor to talk to. And I'm just so happy that the two of us get this opportunity to talk about Survivor in this context.
Yes. Yes, me too. I'm excited for what this podcast holds. And tune into our Patreon! John and I are going to be discussing Ko Rong and the Medivac episode.
Yeah, that's right. So tomorrow in your Patreon feeds, you for $10 and $20 patrons, you should see Maya McKenna's discussion of Ko Rong episode 4, that infamous Medivac episode where we see medical staff everywhere. It kind of changed the way that medevacs were kind of viewed in Survivor. But in the meantime, become a patron so you can listen to that podcast. That's at patreon.com/survivorspecialists. Like, join, subscribe the videos. And that's the big thing. You join Patreon, you join the Discord. I'm there, McKenna's there, Phil and Alexa are there. Lots of conversation going on about Survivor all the time. Tune in on Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern for Phil and Alexa's power rankings with Brendan Shapiro this week. They're working really hard to make sure they have a guest for every single power rankings this season. Phil's after show already up on the Patreon, so you can give that a listen to for those $20 patrons. And of course, if you haven't listened to the pregame content from Phil and Alexa, especially that that new era discussion with Peridium from last Monday, give that a listen to. Phil and Alexa will be coming at to you at after the episode on Wednesday. Oh, and you know, it's a really good time to become a patron, not just because you get to hear more of us, but it's the first week of Survivor. power rankings are starting. The power rankings game starts this week. You have to get your first power rankings in by when the time the episode airs on the East Coast on Wednesday. Now is the perfect time to become a patron.
Join up, everybody. Become a patron. And John and I will see you next week.